In this episode, learn to overcome adversity with your online campaign.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by WireBuzz.
Hey-o! You know, I believe in training every day to overcome adversity. Life is full of challenges, and that's why the first thing I do in the morning is I go on a run or I work out. You know, in order to be successful at work or at life or in relationships, you have to push through. You have to be stronger than your excuses. You have to overcome challenges. And you ain't going through any challenges if you're not pushing through adversity, right? Speaking of which, if you're a frequent listener to this podcast, you by now would know that my parents adopted two kids from Haiti 2 years ago, a brother and a sister, who are now today my brother and sister, right? And I'm inspired by them each and every day. They've come a long way with their life, a long way since the orphanage that their birth mom dropped them off at to where they are now. You know, one of them, my sister's studying at Arizona State University, my little brother, who isn't so little anymore. Well, this week, he graduated from high school. And I'll put some photos from graduation on the show notes page of this episode so you can see them, you can see my family, and you can see people that get up each day to overcome adversity. Marketers and video creators who don't adopt the mindset of constant learning, of struggling, and overcoming those struggles because they think it's an indicator that they aren't smart enough to do it right the first time. Well, those are the marketers and the video creators that are only going to go so far. And that's not the case for everybody, at least not for me and for my team. And I hope it's not the case for you. You know, we're always iterating, always learning from the analytics, and always tinkering to get better optimal results. The answers to every digital marketing answer is buried deep down inside of the analytics. The answers are in the analytics. So in this episode, I'm going to walk you through the process of identifying a flaw in your digital execution, discerning the real problem, and then strategizing the solution. And that's what's going to be coming up in just a few moments. But first, well, here's the news that matters to Video Marketing Masters. TechCrunch is reporting that Starbucks has operated its own mobile payment service since 2011. And Starbucks is now the market leader in the terms of mobile payment users, beating out Apple Pay, Google Pay, and Samsung Pay, according to a new reporter from eMarketer out this morning. Starbucks has 20.7 million users compared to Apple Pay's 19.1 million users. The wide adoption of Starbucks' mobile payment service is not only due to the speed and convenience that the barcode-based payment system offers, but in addition, Starbucks has the benefit of being able to offer a consistent payment experience across its stores. There's never a question in a customer's mind as to whether they can use its mobile payment service or not. They know they can, right? So what's your business takeaway here? If we rewound the clock back to 2011, let's say, when Starbucks launched its mobile payment service, nobody on that Starbucks team could have imagined they would also be creating the number one loyalty program in El Mundo, right? Nobody. Freakish opportunities happen for early adopters, trailblazers. They grab territory, but followers, they purchase from trailblazers. And how many meetings have you been in where smart people got in the way of the trailblazers in the room because those smart people didn't belong in the position of leadership? How many times? I know I've been in those meetings. I know you have too, where destinies were never captured because somebody made an argument like, well, Starbucks mobile payment service sounds fabulous, but we make coffee, guys. Shouldn't we just focus on making the best coffee in the world? Isn't that our mission? We're already spread too thin. Can we just keep our eye on the Starbucks coffee ball? Look, I've been in those meetings. I know you have. And it's the fearful that stifle. Then there's the consistency experience. Let's talk about that. We crave consistency. You know, there's a reason why you keep going back to your favorite restaurant. There's a desired experience that you want to replicate, and that's why you keep ordering and ordering the same things each and every time. We crave consistency. And there's also another reason, and this is interesting. All right, do you know what this is? The other one is loyalty. Payments are tied to loyalty, and the Starbucks app is where customers can monitor and manage their card balance and their star rewards. The best loyalty programs, you know what they are? They're gamified. Check this out. My sister, she told me recently that when my nephew, who's 11, was getting his braces, he was very upset he had to wear a headgear. Like, he had the worst day ever. And I totally get it. Nerds wear headgears. You know I'm right. Don't act like you don't. He wasn't prepared to overcome adversity. So even though he only had to wear it for bed, my nephew was livid. And then something magical happened. He was told about the Orthodontist Rewards Program and all the cool things that he could win, but only if he's a super consistent user of that headgear. And you know what happened? Dude went from being pissed to proud in 4.2 seconds. My nephew responded like an entrepreneur, overcoming adversity and hunting opportunity. What boring, what painful or tedious part of your business can you gamify? How can you take something that your customers think sucks and how can you flip it around and make it fun? Also in TechCrunch, Instagram introduced a new way to mute accounts. Users can still see posts on muted accounts' profile pages and get notified about comments or posts that they're tagged in. Users can mute accounts by tapping the dot, dot, dot button, which is like three periods in a row, right? Or an ellipsis, whatever you want to call it, in the corner of the post. And choosing between multiple posts, stories, or posts and stories, first and foremost, this continues Instagram's effort to block bullying and harassment on the social network, while users have the ability to block accounts for a long time. Muting is the next step in blocking out someone without any consequences that might come from blocking them. Now, bullying is a strange concept. In the last 3 years, it's become a cultural movement, and I get it. Like, I've seen some horrible bullying moments in my life, and I'm sure you have too. And I've been bullied, and I have bullied, and I'm sure you have too. It's important that our culture evolves, right? And it's important for us to see this as an opportunity. But outside of the bullying a kid or an adult, there's another use of the term bullying that socially we just allow to pollute into the other one, and I'm seeing it. When someone disagrees with your political views, they use it to limit your free speech. Now, keep an eye on that one. It's really transparent. It's a political tactic to silence the opposition. If only we remembered, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And as Instagram rolls out the ability to mute other people's accounts, The Verge reports it is unconstitutional for public officials, including the president, to block Twitter followers who criticize him. A court ruled today in a legal dispute over President Trump's Twitter account. Pretty interesting, right? What if the speech is offensive or if it's bullying? And before you know it, everybody's muting and blocking each other and it becomes
el beso de la muerte, the kiss of death.
Bullying is subjective. One person's bully is another person's advocate of free speech. And it's so much easier when you just limit bullying to physical acts of violence and not these subjective, polluted territories. Anyway, enough of my two senses. For dudes addicted to video games, dun, 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 this one is for you. Ubisoft's AI-powered gaming assistant is now available. And I didn't even read this article, but I'm sure the AI gaming assistant works like this. And as a business owner, Here's how I'd expect people to use it. Hey, Ubi. Remember, it's called Ubisoft. Hey, Ubi. Text my boss, quote, traffic on the freeway is like Armageddon. Not moving for a while. Ugh. See you ASAP. Right? People are going to be doing that. Instead of getting off the couch and heading into the office where they belong, they're just going to let the AI gaming assistant text their boss an excuse so they can delay. Speaking of which, Facebook suggests no compensation for European users affected by data breach. What about the people who incurred damages, Facebook? No compensation? Can users mute the problem? They probably can't, right? I mean, if your data got stolen, somebody's using it to open up credit cards, shouldn't you be able to sue Facebook for recklessly using or misusing your data? Which brings me to this. Just how deep of a problem could Facebook's data breach possibly be? That's how I read it as a former investigative reporter. Now, speaking of overcoming adversity, NFL owners voted on Tuesday on changes to the kickoff in a game that will take place in the upcoming season. Now, the impetus in this, in the game of football, is about safety, and the NFL is calling the play, the kickoff, the most dangerous play in all of football. In discussing different proposals before the vote, the league pointed to a study showing that concussions, check this, are 5 times more likely on kickoffs than any other play. Now, this comes right out of Yahoo Sports. And have you heard the new NFL kickoff rules explained? Look, I'm going to do it, but don't worry. This isn't really going to be about football. As a trained broadcast professional, I'm going to tie it right back to you. Your business, marketing campaigns, overcoming adversity, and of course, video marketing for accelerated revenue, all right? But here's the breakdown of the new kickoff rule. Number one, 5 players on the kicking team will be required to line up on each side of the ball. 5 players. Number two, players on the kickoff team will not be allowed a running start. Number three, at least 2 players on the kicking team will be required to line up under and outside the numbers. Got it? Outside the numbers that are on the field. Number four, at least 2 players on the kicking team will be required to line up between the numbers and the hash marks. Can you visualize it? Number five, at least 8 players on the receiving team will be required to line up in a 15-yard setup zone that is near midfield on standard kickoffs, leaving a maximum of 3 players to line up deep to receive the kicked football. Number six, there will be a 15-yard no-blocking zone from where the football is kicked that will be enforced until the ball is touched or hits the ground, blah, blah, blah. Number seven, there will be no wedge blocking allowed on the return where 2 or more blockers align together to protect the ball carrier. Now, you should be asking yourself, man, this sure does sound complicated, doesn't it? And you would be right. So what's your business takeaway? Why would I be bringing it up on Video Marketing Mastery? Because complicated concepts, complicated services, and businesses or products are best taught, say it with me, through video, right? Maybe that's why The Shield, you know, the NFL, released an animation video on Tuesday that explains the new kickoff rules and how they will work, how players have to line up, what's legal, what's illegal, and I'll post it on the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/115. You're going to want to watch it. And in a very short amount of time, they explain all of those rules. Yes, all 7 of them visually. So you can understand it quickly. So you can show up on game day with your striped suit from the Foot Locker and a whistle, and you could start doing the right thing and start calling plays, and you don't even have to sleep at a Holiday Inn Express the night before. What complex product, service, or concept is your business trying to explain? What is it? I just got off the phone. By the way, you should know, I recorded this podcast episode in halves. And in the first half, I stopped because I had a client call me. And you know what their concern is? Man, we've really got a complex business. This is confusing to explain, and we're not sure video's the right tool. Really? You're not sure? You don't think that you can explain it faster in video through maybe an animation and explaining how these pieces all come together for the big picture? Are you kidding me? And then I said, hey, by the way, did you end up seeing that did you end up reading the new NFL rules on the kickoff? And he goes, no, I'm a football fan. I didn't see that. And I said, well, if you read the rules, you'd realize they were complex and the NFL knew it was complex. So you know what they did? Basically, here's your business takeaway. They created an animation video to explain their complex rules. Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, that dude got it. And he's calling me back because we're going to schedule a kickoff meeting for his project. And I'll give you more details on that coming soon. So let's talk about how marketers need to overcome their own adversity in order to optimize their campaigns for best results. And today I'd like to walk you through a real case scenario that's going down for real right now inside the office on one of my campaigns for my own stuff. We'll get to that in a moment. But I want to walk you through it. And we're going to go through the process of identifying the flaws in the live campaign's execution and then dissecting the analytics, because you know that's where the answers always are, to properly identify the problem and strategize the solution. Cool? Now, if you laid out a smart strategy before you got started, auditing your campaign as it goes live is not an indicator of a poorly executed campaign. In fact, a highly functioning online campaign is so much like a race car, like a finely tuned race car. There's a lot of optimizing that needs to go on. And it happens after you gas up the race car and run it around the track, right? You've got to see what it performs, analyze its performance, and then make modifications. And right now, Wirebuzz is actively in the process of optimizing a Todd Hartley speaker campaign. It's an ad campaign where we're targeting event planners. And to join me to talk about this project is a rock star member of the Wirebuzz digital strategy team, Tim Allwell. Tim, what is up?
Hey, 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 Todd. Thanks for having me on the podcast today.
Awesome. You know, Tim, behind the scenes, for those of you who don't know, works on every podcast with me. And it's an integral part to make sure that what I get in my notes ends up being what you see and all this good stuff coming together. And so it's nice, Tim, to have you on the podcast. And let's start at the very beginning, if we could. Hey, can you share with the audience the different pieces of content and the tools that we're using to find event planners that down the road want to hire me for their next event?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we were mapping out the initial strategy, we decided that we were going to run a Facebook advertising campaign. The Facebook ad platform is just so robust, and you can get extremely granular with who you're targeting. So the first thing that we did was we created a list of potential interests and demographics that we could target that were relevant to the event planning and keynote speaking space. So for example, on that list, we had specific event planner publications, speaker bureaus, relevant Facebook pages, and we also included some demographic targeting as well, such as people with the job title event planner or people who express an interest in public speaking and event management. Now, once we compiled that list, the next step was creating an ad that we could test across those different audience segments so that we could determine which one of those pockets of people were resonating most with our message. And in this particular case, we wanted to start with a video ad because we know videos have certain superpowers, they're easier to digest, they're generally cheaper, and on Facebook, you can build a retargeting audience of people who've watched a certain percentage of your video, which is extremely powerful. So once we filmed that video, we went out and tested it across those different audiences. And after we ran our initial test, I think we spent a few hundred dollars over the course of 5 to 7 days. We found that one or two of those audiences outperformed all the other ones. They were getting a significantly cheaper cost per view.
Now, before we even went live with this, I said to Tim, I want you to pick which of these different ads, he's smiling now, you think is going to work. And I'll pick the one that I think is going to get the best results, right? Because we're super, like, competitive in this office. in a good way. But naturally, Tim, and correct me if I'm wrong, selected his long copy because he loves the copy part, right? And I picked me on video, Todd being Todd, right? And how did that work out for you?
Yeah, so I was a little bit in love with my own creative work, and I did pick the long form copy text ad. And what we found out after we ran that campaign was the two video ads that we tested outperformed all three long copy versions of our ad.
And you were surprised?
I wasn't surprised. I knew video would probably inch out, but I was just holding on to that. You know, it was my own little baby, and I wanted it to do really well.
Now, I also want to mention that the first video we did, was that for this campaign where I saw it, we didn't like the energy, and then we redid it?
So actually what happened is we ran an initial campaign with one video. It didn't perform very well. The relevant scores were low. And that what that told us was that our messaging was off. So we actually went and recreated two more video scripts that you filmed, and those did significantly better.
Okay, and the first one we did was me sitting down. And the reason we think not only was it the script a little bit off, but we also noticed that the energy of a speaker is different when they're standing up working a stage compared to sitting in a chair like I was doing in that video.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're the law of state transference. You're in a different energy, and that will definitely pour onto the audience who's watching that ad.
And I think I was dialed back, you know, like I was dialed back to maybe like a 4 when normally when I'm speaking, I'm closer to like an 8, you know, with energy. What I like about this, Tim, is at the core of every great marketer is the realization that they need to question every assumption, even their own. And like you with liking the long form script and me thinking that my video is going to be the one that wins, the best marketer is the one that's already emotionally prepared to let the analytics tell them what's the right content for that audience, right? The audience will bear it out at the end of the day. It's just like if you're a capitalist, you know the market will determine if the product is right or not. And after we launched the campaign, we ran a small test budget. We went into the analytics and started to audit ourselves, which is a really helpful thing. And why was it important for us to audit our performance? And what did we discover needed to be improved?
Yeah, so I've always believed that it's better to front load your advertising budget and spend more in the beginning so that you can collect data faster. And then you can go back, tweak, and optimize your campaign based on the data that you collected.
Because more data is better. More sample size is better.
100%. And it allows you to be a scientific marketer and make smart decisions based on tangible evidence instead of emotions and feelings. And what we discovered after spending a few hundred bucks and getting some data, the analytics was telling us that people were clicking on the link in our ad and visiting the landing page where they could fill out a form to request Todd as a speaker, but they weren't actually filling out the form. They were bouncing off. We also noticed that the relevant scores on the video ad weren't optimal. Relevant scores, they range from 1 to 10, 10 being the best. And we were getting relevant scores of 3 and 4. So our takeaways from that data were, number one, we need to improve the post-click experience and better optimize that landing page. And number two, we need to drill down on our marketing message, because a relevant score of 4 means that our message wasn't hitting with the audience that we're targeting. We also noticed that the ad was being shown too often, which was contributing to the not so positive results of this ad. So one thing that we're going to do on our next run is actually set a frequency limit so that the same person isn't seeing our ad 6 to 7 times and feeling annoyed so much that they choose to hide it.
That makes sense. I mean, the last thing I really want is people to be annoyed with me, right? I mean, I've got enough of that in my life. And as you know, look, I've always looked at an online campaign like a lawn hose that's filling up with water. And if you want to get the water to flow out the other end, which is like a conversion, you have to walk through each step of the hose path to see where there's a gimp. You know, if you're standing there like we were and there was no conversion, there's got to be some place where the water just isn't making it through the whole process, where the water really isn't flowing freely, right? So over the last 48 hours or so, Tim and I have been working on improving our landing page. Talk to me about that process. Tell the audience also how you and I have been working together to to remove the GIMPs out of the hose.
Absolutely. So we started creating a brand new landing page from scratch. We wrote copy, new headline, new sub-headline. We have a different page layout. Todd's been helping me craft the messaging so that it's speaking, you know, with his language. We've also added more social proof and credibility indicators on that page, such as video testimonials from thought leaders who have heard Todd speak. We've added more logos from the biggest events that Todd's spoken at. We've also updated the benefits section on that page to highlight Todd's unique value proposition, what makes him different from all the other speakers. And it looks very promising right now, but we won't know how it actually performs until we start running traffic to it.
And that's actually in an iterative process. I can already tell you that what we've got right now on our test page is significantly better than what we came out of the barn with originally. And I know you're nodding your head. You agree with me 100%. We would be flabbergasted if all of these tightening up opportunities created a decrease. You don't think that's going to happen, do you?
I don't believe so, no.
It just isn't possible at this point because we've really tightened it down, increased social proof, made that page more effective, and also made opting in easier.
Yeah, we did a lot of things to just streamline the process, make the user experience on that page a lot cleaner. So I'm excited to see what the analytics are going to tell us.
All right, that's awesome. When do you think we're going to start pumping more leads or more water through the hose, you know, on that path? When do you think that's going to happen?
Our goal is to have this page plus another one or two ads, fresh ads, complete and ready to test starting early next week. And we'll take the same approach that we did in the beginning, which is spend more up front so that we can collect data fast and then make smart adjustments after 5 to 7 days of testing that campaign.
I want to spend a few moments with the audience just talking about the concept of spending more to get better data. I think maybe one of the easiest ways to think about it is an election, like a presidential election. Hey, let's not get political, but let's just talk about how these polls work. And when you've got a larger sample size, your margin of error is smaller. When the sample size is just you and a couple of friends, the sample's margin of error is much larger. So it's a lot smarter for a marketer that wants to get over the learning curve quicker to apply more gas or to spend more money at the beginning, look at the data, understand it, and then come in and reconfigure.
100% agree with everything you just said.
All right, cool. So will you come back in a coming episode and just share what we've learned and how we've optimized the flow of the new deals?
Absolutely. This campaign, it's been a lot of fun so far, and we'll have more data and more insights for part two of this story.
What I like is we questioned every assumption, right? We're challenging those assumptions, and we're making modifications based on what the market is telling us it will bear. And as we go through this, we're going to be better marketers. In fact, we're going to overcome adversity. And as a speaker, I think there's a lot of really interesting similarities between what a speaker goes through to get their business, their speaking career, and what businesses go through in order to get their marketing working. And often, people get stuck, and this could be a speaker or it could be a business, they get stuck at the marketing point of, I don't think I could do that, or it might be too complex. And they fail to understand that even when you're at our level, you're still iterating, running tests, learning fast, optimizing. And that is really where all the fun is. Nobody shows up on race day at the Indianapolis 500 without doing a ton of testing and optimizations before that flag gets waved. It's waved, right? I was going to give woven. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know if I was in a DeLorean in the future or in the past. But anyway, Tim's going to check back with us, and we're going to give you more information. And when Tim sat down with me, he did a little bit of a snap of the event that we're doing here, a podcast episode. And he said to me about how he was starting to get a little rusty because he hadn't picked up his camera in a little while. Talk to me about that. Let's talk about why practice makes perfect.
Yeah, I think for every human, there's a deep yearning to just create. And as a marketer, I love content creation, but it hasn't been something I've been doing consistently over the past 6 to 12 months. But when I do turn on that camera and I get in front and I start speaking, I just feel my soul come alive, and I just love just sharing. Really, it's just sharing and collaborating with what's going on in my life and documenting what I'm learning. So it just felt really good to bust out the camera recently and just start documenting my journey and sharing some content that I've been learning. And I just feel just much more inspired right now. And I always see Todd busting out his camera in the office and sharing little highlights of what's going on in his life. And it's been inspiring. So thank you, Todd, for inspiring me. And thank you for bringing me on the podcast so I can share some tidbits of information.
Absolutely. You know, Tim, and you guys should know this, Tim's a super hungry marketer. Like, Tim knows I wouldn't have hired him if he wasn't a super hungry marketer. And if he fooled me and said he was a super hungry marketer, I probably would have burned him out after a while. But to Tim's credit, very hungry, learning at a very fast rate. And just that's what it takes to be competitive out there. And you've already got that mindset. And it's really exciting to see, because though that's what separates an average marketer from a marketer that's destined to do great things. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
And hey, by the way, if you want to see a photo of Tim Allwell, Marcus Krieg, and I working on our audit and being able to perfect the strategy and the landing page and the videos all on this campaign, I took a selfie photo of us in Marcus's office. You'll see it on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/155. Well, he's Tim Allwell. Tim is one of our rock star members of the strategy team. As you know, the first thing we do when we sit down with a client is we start to investigate what their goal is. Goal is the most important thing, and like railroad tracks, we go in reverse, connect each piece of the strategy so it's all interconnected all the way back to the video creation. If you're going to be running a campaign, don't worry about that first video being your most expensive one. Don't worry about saving a little bit when you're testing the message or testing the audience or how you're going to convert. Learn at the beginning, perfect, polish, and then invest the resources when you can apply gas and really spread your campaign. Tim, how do people find out about you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Tim_Allwell, and that's it.
That's it? You can also hear Tim coming up on a future podcast. Tim, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
All right. So that's how we do it. We're in adversity right now, right? We're going to overcome. One of the cool things is about pushing past the point where you don't think you can do something and make it happen. And as somebody that comes to this microphone twice a week to help advocate for you and defend you, I want you to know this is part of the natural process that we all go through, and it is totally normal. What isn't normal is sharing it publicly on your podcast. Like, most marketers want people to think that this just happens and they've just got, you know, brilliant gold coming out of their hands. But the testing process is what a chef goes through. They don't just all of a sudden become Julia Childs. They go through many iterations before they get that flambé to do its thing and flam and bay, and you know it.
If this podcast episode was valuable to you, then by all means, go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Rate and review up there. I read all of them. I learn from it. It helps me become a better marketer. And make sure you share this with people. There's remarkable things that we're doing. I know, because I hear all of your feedback. There's a lot of information here, and if it can benefit somebody that you're rooting for, please advance this, forward it to them, share it on social media, talk to a colleague about it. The whole goal is about making you a better video marketer, make you a better business entrepreneur or salesperson, because we really own the territory between video and marketing and sales and ROI. That is our intersection. And we help people, as you know, speed up the sales process. And many of you are learning from it. And I appreciate all the support that I'm getting from all of you out there. And I will continue to advocate and defend for you and your projects along the way by bringing you the latest information. Now, here's a little inside baseball. Does it sound a little different, this part? Well, I'm actually sitting now in the airport, in Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix, right by the gate where you check in, drop your bags. I got an email from Tim Allwell that was like, dude, You never closed out that interview. Never closed out the podcast episode. Well, sure enough, I'm about to go on a flight to Vegas, speak in Vegas, and then from Vegas I go to Chicago. And so, long story short, I've got all this camera gear with me. I'm about to check in. Dale Krupla from the crew is going to be traveling with me. He'll be connecting from Vegas. He'll fly out to New York City, where he's going to meet the rest of the Wirebuzz crew, and we're going to do a shoot there for clients. And anyway, that's a ton of information for you, but now you know the backstory of why it sounds different when I'm closing out episode 155. Peace out to all of you. Thank you for your support and more information coming along the way to make you a better video marketing master. Peace.